To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our topic this evening is Providence Caregivers Ready to Strike. Our guests are Richard Botterill and Kim Martin of ONA, the Oregon Nurses Association at Providence Hospital in Portland. ONA represents nurses and clinicians at dozens of Providence facilities across Oregon. Richard is an emergency room nurse and chair of the ONA bargaining team at that hospital and on the ONA board of directors. Kim is a medical surgical nurse and vice chair of the bargaining team at Portland Providence Medical Center. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Laura. It's great to see you and Jamie.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start with the headlines. The Northwest Labor Press says the biggest yet Providence strike could be coming. We had both of you on our Labor Radio show back 2.5 years ago in March of 2022. At that time, you had just staged an 800-person informational picket outside Providence St. Vincent Hospital in Beaverton. Since then, ONA members have been on strike twice, in June 2023 and June of 2024, for a few days each time. As of December 3rd this year, 5,000 ONA members and 70 doctors and midwives in the PNHMA, or Pacific Northwest Hospital Medicine Association, have authorized a strike at 8 Providence hospitals and 6 Providence clinics around Oregon. They could strike all at once or piecemeal, most likely open-ended rather than limited duration as in the past, after giving a legally required 10-day notice. No strike dates have been set as of the time of this interview, Thursday, December 26th. Please give us a blow-by-blow of what's been happening in this struggle with Oregon's largest healthcare provider, and what is the importance of lining up contract expiration dates at a number of Providence facilities.
So yeah, this has been going on ever since the last time we talked to you. And when we went out on strike almost 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago. And this has been accentuated when House Bill 2697 came into law, the safe staffing bill for healthcare workers. And the issues that we're dealing with, there's four major. Safe staffing, obviously, is the big one. We have paid time off, also used for sick time in our world. We have our healthcare, which I'm probably going to talk about later, and we have wages. Now, some of our hospitals have been at the table negotiating with Providence for more than 15 months. And during that time, for the last year, in fact, those same hospitals have actually been working without a contract for the last 12 months. So they're some of the big issues that we're looking at right now. And as you mentioned, now we have 8 hospitals and all of the nurses at those 8 hospitals have authorized a strike through a strike authorization vote. The hospitalists and the OBGYN docs and other folks at the women's clinics have also authorized a strike, and they are both working on their initial contracts. The rest of us are all looking at a continuation of contracts that already exist.
I would say Providence nurses have been experiencing takeaways and benefits and support to do the job the public deserves over the last decade at least. And this is not having to cut worker benefits because times are tight. This is about choosing other priorities. Providence is a quote-unquote nonprofit that is over a $30 billion corporation and then pays their executives millions of dollars. And they have they've made these cuts or gains by just standing still and really not and just refusing to negotiate. And when these cuts mean there's less nurses, that means there's understaffing. That means when a confused or scared patient needs comforting, they may need to wait longer. That means when someone's painful, they may need to wait longer to get attention, or worse things could happen. And when that happens, nurses suffer moral injury. They get burned out. And we're at a point now, some nurses are ready to get bold and demand better. And that's why all of the bargaining units in Oregon have authorized the strike authorization vote by a majority. Guys, there's one point that is big for all the other units, but it's not an issue for mine and Richard's unit, that I just maybe I'll mention. So we're just expiring here, our Providence Portland, at the end of December. We haven't gone 15 months without a contract, but we have negotiated past expiration before. And in my long experience at Providence, it was always all the provisions of the contract were abided by and continued while both parties negotiated in good faith. And when we got to a deal, it was considered just that those people that kept showing up, doing their shifts, doing the work, got a retro payment for all those hours on any wage increase that we procured for the start of the new contract and the expiration of the old. And Providence cloaks themselves in the core value of justice. But it's a relatively recent thing that Providence has started to come out very sternly and say, we don't do retro pay. And this is just, it's more than the money. It's the insult to the caregivers that this is a big issue for many other the other units at the table.
Yes, my understanding is that some of your members are essentially owed tens of thousands of dollars in retro pay from Providence. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Horrible.
At this point, they've been offering some of those people what they've referred to as a bonus that is in, you know, 1-2,000 range. But yeah, there are a lot of people that are, you know, the people that are working day in and day out, that I think it is $10,000 or more dollars.
Yeah, it would be a little less offensive if we felt that there was a real genuine push to get to agreement by contract expiration. So I would say with this contract at Providence Portland, we asked for bargaining dates early in the year. And we were kind of put off and put off and put off. And when we got a date, we were ready. We had narrowed our articles to open. We had a complete proposal and we passed it day one. And here we are at the end of December. We have very little movement.
See, to kind of build off of what Kim just said. So as you may be aware, last week, all of the bargaining units of Providence hospitals across the state were all bargaining together with mediators for the entire week, Monday through Friday. The Friday before we went into this negotiating period, this mediation period, Providence Portland had asked us for a comprehensive proposal, which we provided them on that Friday. We met with them on Monday, and it would be easy to get the impression that they really hadn't done much work looking at that proposal. We went through the entire week. Providence finally came back to us with a counter proposal, if you like, last Friday at the end of the week, which I think was the 20th. The counter proposal they gave us on the 20th was exactly the same as the proposal they'd given us on November 21st.
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. We've been listening to Richard Botterill and Kim Martin of the Oregon Nurses Association. The topic is Providence Caregivers Ready to Strike. If you like this information, if it helps you get through your day, please think consider contributing to KBOO, a non-corporate listener-supported community radio. And you can do that by going to kboo.fm and donating.
And I think the majority of nurses are very aware, the majority of healthcare workers are very aware of the repercussions of the privatization or the institutionalization of healthcare. It's been corporatized now. And I think that there are people running healthcare across the country. It's not just, we're not unique in this, to where you think you can run a healthcare organization the same as you can run any other organization, whether it's in a car manufacturing or whatever else it might be. And that's not the case. And I think that's one of the problems that we're running into now is that corporatization of the healthcare community. It's detrimental to the people that work in that world, and it's certainly detrimental to the communities that we serve.
So over the past few years, we've seen a surge of hospitals getting bought up by private equity firms, meaning basically investors trying to make more money. What's been the impact of this trend on patients and healthcare workers?
You know, this is a growing and disturbing trend because these groups are trying to make a profit, not invest in staff, not invest in safe patient conditions. And there is peer-reviewed research out there that shows an increase in hospital-acquired conditions like falls and bloodstream infections. And this is not the mission the sisters envisioned for Providence patients. But it has left some of their choices, have left some of us pondering and speculating that maybe Providence is trying to get themselves into position for a move like this.
I think another example of that is, I think that some of the clinics now, it used to be that the healthcare workers were required to see 24 patients in a shift. And my understanding is that now that number has been increased to 36. And I don't think it's difficult to see how that is detrimental to patient care.
I wonder if that's why recently several units of providers, like nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and medical doctors, have organized and joined ONA. What's the significance of those units unionizing? And how are those providers involved in the current contract campaign?
You know, I think it just underlines, when it's just all the nurses, it's one thing when one or two hospitals are going and talking about strike, are trying to get to the table, are trying to negotiate in a fair way to get a contract that's reasonable and rational. That's one thing. Then it expands to where all of the hospitals in the state of Oregon that are Providence hospitals are all saying the same thing, are all at the table, are all asking for the same improvements and the same changes within their contracts and within their work environment. But at that point, it's still, well, it's just the nurses. Well, now we have doctors and other healthcare providers across the board coming out and saying the same things. So I think that, I think going back to what we were just talking about with the corporatization, I think that that kind of just underlines that this is a serious problem that we're facing. And again, it's not just Providence, but we are Providence. We're the people of Providence. And that's the organization that right now is standing up and saying, wait a minute. You know, we need to change how we're managing. We need to change how we're functioning and working as a healthcare organization for the sake of, not, again, not just the people working in that organization, but the people that come to us for care.
2023, the Oregon legislature passed a safe staffing law for healthcare settings, HB 2697. What's your view on the law? And have conditions changed at all since it was passed?
I have mixed feelings. When the law first came into place, one of the first things when I read through it is identifying all of the loopholes that have been placed in that law. Obviously, it was a law that was negotiated between management as well as healthcare workers and unions. So there's a lot of people involved in that. So I, first of all, noticed all of the loopholes and thought, oh, well, that's a way to soften it a little bit. Here's another way to soften it a little bit. Now, I think it has helped in that some of the other pieces of the law are very solid in terms of looking at ratios. How many patients can a nurse have? I think it's positive in looking at ensuring that nurses and healthcare workers get their breaks. I think it's important in looking at what constitutes safe staffing within any unit within the hospital. So there's the positives. Unfortunately, In our discussions, what we found is Providence's position and interpretation of the law differs from the nurse's interpretation of the law. Our position is you're misinterpreting the law. Their position is, no, we're just interpreting it in a different way. To my mind, what was very clear is at one of our negotiating sessions several weeks ago now, the corporate attorney came out and basically gave us his version of a rewrite of our staffing article within our contract. And at that point, I pointed out and I said, you know, it looks like what you've done here is you've tried to rewrite the contract in a way to get around all of the issues in the law that you don't like. And to his credit, he acknowledged that that was exactly what he'd done. So, you know, there is a positive to that. We're still discussing our differences of opinion on how the law is to be interpreted. I think that now our staffing committee, and Kim is also a member, a powerful member of our staffing committee at Providence Portland. Fortunately, we have a very solid staffing committee who are the people that are, through the law, the people that approve staffing contracts, if you like, with each of the units around our hospital. So that's a process that's continuing. And I would actually defer to Kim to talk more about that, because I think she's closer to it and knows a lot more than I do about the inner workings of staffing committee.
Yeah, I would. The law does a few things, but one of the things it does is it puts a stop sign, a limit on the number of patients a nurse can have care for at one time. And as Richard said, I'm on the staffing committee at our hospital, which is supposed to, as is required by law, approves safe staffing plans for nursing units. Management has made it clear to us since the law passed that they just have no appetite to pass any mutually agreed on plans. They want to default to the maximum number of patients a nurse can have as prescribed in the setting, without regard to acuity factors that may make that maximum number not appropriate. They also say that maximum is a mandate. It's not a maximum, it's a mandate. You must have those many patients. So they want to put their distorted version of the law, some wording into our contract, which for me is just an absolute no-go. For me personally, that is a strike issue, nothing I can abide by. I think we'll have to continue working on settling our differences on the meaning of the law, but we want to pass safe staff. The staff nurses want to pass real nursing plans with acuity factors, and that is a job for the nurses that care for patients. This is not a job for hospital attorneys.
Can you, for those of us who are lay, explain what acuity means?
So factors that influence a patient's acuity would mean how much care they require, how unstable they may be, how likely they may be to transfer to a higher level of care like the intensive care unit if they have complicated dressing changes. Those things that are naturally going to acquire more nurse attention. So if you have four very high acuity patients, nurses are afraid something's going to get missed. Somebody might get hurt. So we think we have to measure acuity and balance acuity when we make these staffing plans.
And I think that, you know, to frame that, all of this is happening during a period of time when we are seeing increased census in terms of the number of patients we're seeing and coming into the hospital on a daily basis. And we're seeing, I believe, and Kim, I'll also ask you if you agree, we're seeing increased acuity across the board. So more patients, more higher acuity, which again points to, you know, we need to have appropriate staffing so we can care for these people.
Yes, I've absolutely noticed an increase in acuity over the course of my career. And thankfully, I think since Obamacare, more people have access to the hospital, and that's a good thing. but our healthcare system is failing in providing the same access to preventative care. I think keeping people healthy than it has, or it could. Let's say that it could.
Throw on top of that, the fact that we've been seeing an increasing staffing shortage, nursing shortage over the last several years. I think that started probably, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years ago. And that's continuing to be the case.
Well, I think the situation for all workers has been more tenuous and less stable and harder to take, afford good food, afford time off, afford good exercise, all the things that keep us healthy. And when our workforce as a whole is being squeezed, we're going to see an unhealthier population walk through our doors.
Right. I've heard that over half of nurses are considering leaving the profession. The nursing shortage has increased dramatically since COVID, as well, as you're saying, Richard. So help us understand, what is the connection between the nursing shortage and the understaffing practices and worker compensation?
I think there are less people going to nursing schools than there were in the past. I think that's dropped off. That's a part of it. I think there are, you know, like in any other field, you know, a lot of us are baby boomers. We're getting to the time where we want to say, okay, I want to take a rest now, you know. So that's happening. The relationship it has is when you're working with, and again, this is not unique to us in many ways, but when you're working with a finite number of people who are qualified to do a job, then competition increases to get those people, to recruit them, to retain them, and to take care of those people. So if we look at within the Oregon, the state, our state, and we look at Portland and the Portland metro area, there's a lot of big hospitals around. Well, one of the things we are looking at is trying to balance our all of the package, if you like, the entire package for nurses, so that it's competitive. That way we can attract nurses, we can retain nurses, we can educate nurses, we can keep nurses, and the nurses that stay for a long time are the ones that train the new nurses coming on. We're not doing that to a certain degree. At Providence, we're not becoming competitive in all of those aspects. The package we provide, the wages are not at the same level as other hospitals across the state, not just in Portland. Our healthcare is not that great. We're going through a transition right now in healthcare, and one would think that, given the world we work in, given the people that we care for, we should have pretty decent healthcare. So we can actually remain healthy. And that doesn't appear to be happening.
Well, I would say years and years ago, when I decided to become a nurse, what was attractive to me is that I would, for my college degree and advanced training, I would be a professional. I assumed I would have retirement and sick time and vacation time and those kinds of benefits. And There is no defined retirement for folks coming on. We don't have a sick care bank anymore. Our healthcare is more expensive than many of the patients that we take care of, our out-of-pocket costs. During COVID, a lot of people thought, oh, well, you guys know what it's like to get tested for COVID all the time. Not really, not so much. And unfortunately, during the COVID shortage, one of our quote unquote leaders said, COVID showed us what we could do without. And this is disturbing to nurses that felt some trauma working through a pandemic with a shortage of nurses and the intensity of work and the decay of our usual nursing standards. So it does make it a less attractive field to go into because the work is hard. And I don't think we're the only profession that is suffering. I think that's why we're seeing other professionals join a union.
So Providence and other healthcare companies are dealing with the nursing shortage by bringing in travelers or temporary agency nurses that typically make much more money than staff nurses and can function as strike breakers. How does this system impact patient care, and can Providence bring in traveling nurses to replace, say, MDs or physician's assistants or midwives or the others that are also considering striking?
Well, I think that replacing MDs is a much, much more challenging task. I'm not sure if it's possible, but I think that's way more difficult. Bringing in travelers, I can speak to the last time when we were on strike a couple of years, about a year and a half ago, and the message was that everything was fine and everything was going well. We got to talk to a lot of the people that worked through that period of time, in all areas, not just nurses, transporters, registration, respiratory therapy, physical, occupational therapies, all of those folks, and all of them said it was awful. And doctors were very glad to see us come back, because the people that were brought in were not comfortable, weren't as trained maybe. They were getting paid a lot of money. And one of the big, I guess, advantages, one of the reasons that I see Providence liking to do this is if you're a traveler, if you're a contract worker, you're not a union member. You don't get paid time off. You don't get sick time. You don't get health insurance. And so, you know, having a contract or traveler come in, it's about 50% of the cost for a nurse that is working there, that understands the world, understands the population that we serve, and understands the interactions that go on throughout the hospital with all of the different disciplines. So you're not going to have union members working there. Now, the other side of that is, I heard from a lot of the people that were there working while this went down, that a lot of the nurses there were kind of amazed at how well nurses were getting it here in terms of where they came from in the South and in the East Coast, where there is no unions. And a lot of the reasons they travel is to earn that kind of money. And the money was considerably more. I've had calls over the last few weeks from recruiters asking me if I would like to come and work at some of the Providence hospitals.
Yeah, I have personally at times wondered if Providence still thinks of nurses as professional workers that should have benefits. And they may actually, even though they may be in some ways more expensive, contractors don't have vacation time or healthcare benefits. And most importantly, they're not part of a union. They don't have retirement. They're just people they can plug in the blocks. And but we know that safe patient care is administered by teams that know each other, that work together, that have shared knowledge, and that's how people are kept safe. So it's great to have an additional staff if you, in a pinch, if you need it, but it's no way to staff safely. Mm-hmm. And I think Providence is leaning more in that direction of having temporary workers instead of teams of safe professionals working together.
I think that's one of the things I love still about working for Providence and the people I work with. It's my peers across the board. I mean, all of the techs, the CNAs, the therapists, the complete, you know, cross match of therapists, whatever that might be, the radiologists, and the doctors. I mean, the people that are working with patients at the bedside remain an amazing group of people at Providence. And most of the nurses I know that are still working there will echo and say exactly the same thing, that it's the family, it's the team. The legacy of the sisters remains at the bedside. And would you agree with that, Kim?
Absolutely. When I started at Providence, there were nurses that would work together on the same unit for decades. They were essentially family. And everybody knew the rules. Everybody held everybody accountable to the rules and how things should be done in a safe, efficient way. And now I think over 50% of our staff are less than 5 years mm-hmm. at our particular hospital.
Yep.
A lot of great people, but culture is changing.
So you're ready to strike. How will this strike pressure Providence to do the right thing?
Boy, if if I had the answer to that, I'd write a book. I think that, you know, we we're going to be meeting this evening to discuss these things. I mean, one of the great things that I think has happened over the last few years as we go through some of the issues that we've been going through is that all of the bargaining units meet and talk on a regular basis across our entire system in the state of Oregon. So we're all talking to each other. I think that is a huge thing to do. We all know, and we're all very supportive of each other. And I think that's been a great stride forward. In the past, when we have struck, we've had limited duration or ULP, unfair labor practice strikes, which are, as the name suggests, limited duration, 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, whatever it might be. If we do go out on strike again, this time it is likely to be, and I think it is, I can say it is going to be, an open-ended strike. Now, when it's a limited duration strike, and you guys are probably aware, when we say we're going to strike, we have to give 10 days notice, and then we go out. In the past, Providence's position is once we give that 10-day notice, they will say, we're not going to negotiate with you during that 10-day notice, and we are not going to negotiate with you while you're out on strike. And that works for them on a limited duration. But when it's open-ended, you have to negotiate. There must be a negotiation to try and get things back to status quo, to get people to come back in, to arrive at a fair contract, a rational contract, so that we can all come back to work and we can continue working and serving our community. I mean, that's the bottom line, is right there. So I'm hoping that if we do end up going out and we're not able to come to an agreement prior to that, that Providence will actually sit down and negotiate with us in a reasonable way.
I would say we have been trying to have reasonable, rational discussions, conversations at the bargaining table, because obviously it's in everyone's best interest. It's in the patients, the communities, the nurses, and Providence management's best interest for us to get to a deal. But as I said, they have made a lot of gains by standing still and refusing to negotiate. And so nurses by nature are usually comforters, peacekeepers, caregivers. It takes a lot to move every bargaining unit in the state to the point where we're ready to walk out until we get a fair deal. So I am hoping that speaks to them, but I cannot pretend to know the mind of the Providence corporate mind.
So speaking of strike, what do you want pro-union Providence patients to do, given a strike?
Funny you should ask that, Jamie. One of the things is to go to, there's a website, oregonrn.org/patientsbeforeprofits. And that is a website where people can contribute to the strike fund. Because there's a huge breadth of, again, like in the world we live in, a huge breadth of people that are working in healthcare. Yeah, they all tend to be, caring, thoughtful, considerate, compassionate people. But there are single parents. There are people that are living paycheck to paycheck. There are a lot of other people that have, bills, mortgages, whatever it might be. And so we, within Providence, in the Providence Union, within ONA, and we are getting support from AFT, our parent union, to build strike funds to help the people who run into financial difficulty through the period of any strike that may occur. So that website is a place where people can go, and if they are so moved to do so, can contribute to that strike fund.
I'm hoping people stay healthy and well during the strike. And I hope that they can give support to the nurses with the knowledge that nurses want to maintain Oregon and the Northwest as a great place to get high quality nursing care. And we want to keep it that way for the folks here.
We don't want to strike. We would much rather have a, as I said before, a reasonable, rational, fair contract, and come back and continue working with the communities. That's the goal of, I think, every single bargaining unit and negotiating team across the Providence, Oregon world. That's our goal.
So that was OregonRN.org/patientsbeforeprofits. Is that correct?
Yeah, and the patients before profits, all one word.
How will improving staffing and compensation at Providence impact healthcare providers in the other big companies like Kaiser, Legacy, and the Oregon Health and Science University?
I think we're behind all of them at this point. And that's one of the reasons that we are in negotiations, you know, in bargaining. All of those organizations you just mentioned have better wage structures and better health care than we do. And all of us are, you know, union. So I think working together raises the quality of nursing, raises the quality of care we provide, again, you know, I'm harping on it, across our community, across the entire state. That's the reality, and that surely that should be the goal, is to have the best healthcare possible for the people that live in Oregon. I mean, yes, we want to have it across the entire country, but we live here, and our goal is to have great, great healthcare for the people that we serve.
I would say, even back when we bargained, when the sisters, when we had conversations, when the sisters controlled Providence, we knew we did not have the really great health coverage that Kaiser nurses did. We didn't have the PERS retirement that OHSU nurses did, but we had pretty good staffing and we were typically top of market in wages. We're kind of sliding on everything. And I think we just want to hold the line along with our brothers and sisters at other hospitals.
I hear stories from nurses who talk about childbirth. So I hear stories from nurses who have gone through, you know, go through childbirth, and they have given birth at a Providence hospital under Providence insurance and healthcare. And it can cost them $3,000 or more. And then I talk to nurses who maybe have other insurance through their husbands or spouses, or have, you know, pick up shifts and get their insurance from another hospital that they might work at. You mentioned OHSU and Kaiser. And for them, the cost of childbirth is around $200.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a difference.
Wow.
So you mentioned the strike fund. How else can our listeners keep in touch, especially if they want to get involved in solidarity actions before and during a strike?
Well, I think, Jamie, one of the things, you know, you and I have talked about this in the past, and you know, you know how much respect I have for you and what you do for the labor movement in this state. I think that, you know, we will have lawn signs. We will have leaflets. We will have signs we can put up in shop windows. And, you know, simply writing email and writing to the Providence management across the state, expressing their support for the nurses, their support for what we're trying to accomplish and what we're trying to achieve. I think all of those things are very worthwhile. If we do go to strike, then obviously we will be picketing outside the hospitals. My understanding is if we do go out, there will be pickets outside all of the hospitals. Come out and join us, just as I know you guys have done in the past. Come out and join us. Come out and walk with us, talk with us. I know the last time we did this, it was a little different because it was in the summer. But the support we received from our community was absolutely amazing, heartwarming.
And last time it was the summer and there was dancing in the streets and we honk. They told us, management told us they could hear the honkers inside. And we really, really were energized and so appreciative of all the community support.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we'll be allowed to have burn barrels and roast marshmallows this time. It'll be cold. It might be wet. It might be rainy. But give us a wave. Give us a honk. Know that we love you too.
And if you're a member of a union or an organization like Jobs with Justice or Democratic Socialists of America, check in with your organization about how you can plug in to being in solidarity with the Providence caregivers. Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Richard Botterill and Kim Martin of ONA, the Oregon Nurses Association, at Providence Hospital in Portland. Thanks to my co-host, Laura Wadlin. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.